Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have an email here from G.
Hey, hi friends. I hope you're doing well. So this might be an odd question, but I figured it would be helpful to get your take on this in case others find themselves in a similar boat. By the way, that random last comment right there reminds me of once I was in Japan. I was in a car with a bunch of Japanese people, and I literally said in Japanese, "We're all in the same boat." And they looked at me like I was a fish out of water. Like, what? No, we're in the same car, dude. And that's when I first realized that some of these things don't translate. Anyways, sorry, G. Tangent there, but I still, that was an aha moment for me.
That's when Ben learned about idioms.
Okay. I am a full-time senior HR manager at one of the universities whose law school I plan to apply to, but not directly tied to the law school itself. I like the work just fine, and the function in general has made me certain that I would love, and that's italicized and underlined, internal counsel / employment law as a career. Okay. However, I'm exhausted. This is italicized and bold.
Yeah. We got lots of different font combos going on here.
Semicolon. Oh, I get up early on weekdays to do a section, go into work, try to sneak into live classes during the day, and then come back in the evenings to maybe hop onto a class for a half hour and catch up on the rest of the recording the next day.
So talking about our live demon live classes, mm-hmm. and watching half of the participating in half of the live class and then watching the rest of it recorded, because we post all the classes. Okay, got it.
I'm noticing my studies start to simmer out, and some days I just flat out crash and burn. While I'm doing much better overall, I've been struggling to get a test in on the weekends for well over a month. I've considered resigning so that I can focus on the LSAT more. Parentheses, I already do some consulting on the side that would allow me to get by even if it's not full-time work. But I'm concerned that if I were to leave and then apply several months later, it would reflect poorly on me. Do I just ride it out, see where I get in, and then leave before school starts? Or is it worth taking the burned bridge risk if it means I can absolutely ensure I'm in the mid-170s when I sit for the test? Okay, considering my 12-year-old 3.3 undergraduate GPA, thanks pre-med and STEM, a high score is the only thing that starts to trigger full rides at the T25s and the T20s I like.
And okay. G's saying that based on our scholarship estimator, that's at lsatdemon.com/scholarships, playing with that 3.3 UGPA and various LSAT scores. G is convinced that it's going to take something in the mid-170s to get those full rides at the right kinds of schools. Got it.
Sure. Yep. I'd love your thoughts on this if you're up for considering it. You're the best, and thanks so much. Well, thanks for writing in, G. I get the feeling that you're putting too much stock into your work and you're leaving. I mean, the most important thing is your LSAT score. I'm not saying that you need to leave your job to get a high LSAT score, but I guess I wouldn't. If your concern is how it looks when you apply to this school, I don't know. People quit their job and they go do other things.
The thing that's going to reflect poorly on you is a poor LSAT score.
For sure. I mean, there's no question there, right?
Yeah, like that's a certainty. They're barely even going to look at you. You know, these schools, the ones that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm imagining that, you know, with a 165, they're not even going to really take a serious look at you.
Yeah.
Like, well, you're below my median LSAT, and you're definitely below my median GPA, and next. But if you apply with a 175, then they're going to be like, oh, shit, okay. Mm-hmm. Splitter, this person's above my 50th percentile, above my median LSAT, and
yeah,
okay, so the old GPA, and then, you know, maybe they dig into it a little further and they go, oh wait, but that was pre-med and it was STEM and it was 12 years ago, and 175. Look at that. So, yeah, you're like looking at these minutiae, but there's just the one big obvious thing. Like, I mean, that, so that's my overarching advice is do whatever you have to do to make sure that the LSAT's right. Now, is that leaving the job?
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, it sounds like you're trying to squeeze in too much in your day. Can you leave a little bit earlier? Can you be a little bit more effective at work so that you can leave earlier or just kind of put your foot down and leave? Maybe you're doing too much LSAT studying. Like, it feels like you're doing a class during the day and then you're trying to do another class at night.
Yeah, G said a section on weekdays.
Yep.
And then classes during the day, class in the evening, and then recorded class the next. Yeah, I mean, okay, so let's cut some stuff out here. G says, I've been struggling to get a test in on the weekends for well over a month. I think that that means a full-length timed test.
Yep.
G, I don't care. Don't worry about that. You're already doing timed sections, it sounds like, most weekdays. Getting up
probably
early.
Too many. Why don't you?
Well,
do
yeah, but let's deal with that in a second. Because I mean, I'm presuming that if you're doing a section every morning before work,
yep,
then you don't need to do a full test on a weekend ever. Like, you're already good. Like, if you're, let's say you're doing it Monday through Friday, a timed section before work.
Yeah, you're
that
doing
takes some discipline.
1.5 tests at least a week.
Exactly. Yeah. You're already, I mean, and so, you know, add up your scores from those tests or those sections, and that's plenty for diagnostic purposes. It's plenty for real practice purposes. 5 sections a week is all, that's plenty. I mean, and even if that was only 4 or 3, I would still say it's probably plenty. 3 might be the minimum. You know, 1 section of games, 1 section of LR, 1 section of reading comp every week, timed. But
yeah,
whether you do them back to back to back or whether you spread them out across 3 different days, I don't care at all. So you're fine on that.
I would also add, while we're talking about that, if you do 3 sections from the same test, you can merge them in the Demon and it will make it into a full length test.
Yeah, and give you your 120 to 180 score. Okay, so we can cut out a little bit of that and you can stop worrying about this, you know, stress of I haven't been able to do a full test on the weekends. Yeah, okay, who cares? Yeah, classes. Why are you sneaking into live classes during the day and doing classes in the evening and watching half of a recorded class the next day? That sounds like maybe you're doing too much of the live classes and, you know, maybe pick and choose a little bit more judiciously what you're going to do.
100%. I mean, I think what G is doing here, which is super common, is confusing the process with the end result. And somehow, you know, checking these boxes off every day, like, oh, I did a section in the morning, oh, I did a live class during the day, oh, I did half of a class at night.
Yeah,
you're feeling like accomplished or that you're making progress because you're doing those things, where in reality the most consistent and easiest way to make progress is to do one question and make sure you understand
and
it.
Right, and so G never said anything about drilling.
Nope.
Which
I'd rather you drill in the morning, because then you could do it in 15 minutes instead of 35 plus review. Like, people studying while they're tired.
Well, G didn't even say reviewing those timed sections, right? So I hope that you're thoroughly reviewing every mistake you made during each of those timed sections. But if you're getting up, like, maybe you have just 35 minutes.
Yep.
And you're like doing the section and then you're like checking your answers to see which, how many you got right. And then you're rushing off to work. Well, then you've got a task still to do, which is to go review all of those questions that you missed. I hope you're doing that.
Yep.
If you're not doing that, then you need to, you know, it's like, I don't want you in my live class. I mean, I do. I want everybody. I like having a full class. I'm sure you do too, Ben.
Sure.
It's nice having the energy of like lots of people in class. Yeah. But I don't want you in class if you're not thoroughly reviewing every mistake you made outside of class.
Yeah.
That's just a waste of time. That's like, that's not efficient. I don't want you there just sitting there, you know, trying to get some laughs out of my LSAT class. I want you to get real understanding from the LSAT, which requires you have to confront every mistake.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe last issue here with G, this idea about burning bridges. Notice G doesn't even work at the law school. G works at a university that happens to have a law school. So, I mean, like, do you think that UCLA law gives a shit if a UCLA undergrad HR manager happened to quit their job before then applying to UCLA law?
I mean, the only downside here is that if you, quote, burn bridges, you're going to lose that letter of recommendation, right? Like, okay, now you can't seek a letter of recommendation from them. But I don't see why you even have to burn bridges. So, yes, I don't think, to answer your question, I don't think the law school cares about some employee at the university, but I don't even think the law school cares about an employee at the law school unless they specifically know them. And even then, it's how you leave. Give them your 2 weeks notice. Say, hey, look, I got stuff I got to do. I really have enjoyed this work, but I've got to go on to something else. This happens all the time in the economy. And you move on. If you just like leave in a rude or quick or unprofessional way, you don't help the next person coming in or whatever, then yeah, I think you've burned a bridge, but I don't see why you need to burn a bridge just to quit.
Yeah, right. Leaving jobs is not burning bridges. You're an HR manager. You know that there are some people who tell everybody to fuck off on their way out the door. Okay, that's burning bridges. But you're not going to do that. You would leave in a professional manner. You're allowed to leave. I don't know. And I mean, as a manager, Ben, I think you can probably attest to this. Like, there's a tendency to, you're going to respect people more who draw boundaries around what they're willing to do for you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, what about a middle ground here of, can you cut back your hours? Can you go in there and ask them? Can you go in there and just tell them you're studying for the law school admission test and you need more time in your life and you love your job and you're good at your job and you want to keep doing it, but you don't have 60 hours a week to give them anymore, or you don't even have 40 hours a week to give them anymore.
Yeah. I mean, and the good point there is if they say no, then it's like you're leaving regretfully. It's almost partly their fault.
Yeah. It's like you got out the fire hose and sprayed down the bridge before you walked across it. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not burning this. I want to save the bridge at all costs, but I have to do this thing. And is there any way we could work something out?
Yeah.
You know? And then if you have to leave, you have to leave. But I don't know. I just, I have specific information about someone who applied to a law school that they actually worked at, got waitlisted, kept studying for the LSAT, came back with like 7 more LSAT points. Maybe it was a little more than that, but they just got in this cycle. That's somebody who works at the school and is well regarded at the school. But their connection at the school didn't do shit for them when they didn't have the right LSAT.
No, the law school is facing enormous pressure to maintain their LSAT and GPA ranges. Deans are fired when those numbers drop too significantly.
Well, and this was an applicant at, it's a top 3 school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they're not even really under that much of that kind of pressure necessarily. Maybe they are, but
I mean, on some level, they have to maintain it with 7 points. That might, who knows?
Yeah. And it was just like, well, okay, but with a 170, you're not really, it's not impressive to us. And then with a high 170s, oh, okay.
Well, there's the two pressures, right? One, there's the selfish one, like we got to maintain our scores for our own backing. But as we always talk about, there's also this, maybe, I don't know if it's benevolent or what, but they're concerned about your ability to succeed at the law school. And when you have that lower LSAT score, they're less confident in that ability. So they might be inviting you to fail, and they don't want to do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's good reasons and bad reasons why they care so much about the LSAT.
Yeah.
I mean, there's better and worse reasons, I guess I should say. Yeah. But yeah, they want to know if you can cut it, and they want to know what you're going to do to their public profile. And the high LSAT tells them both of those things.
Yep.
So yeah, I think, gee, if you have to leave this job, you have to leave this job. But it seems like there's some other alternatives too for getting more efficient or maybe cutting back. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.